Hey podcast, welcome back to another episode. Now today we've got Luke Holroyd from Shark E-Bikes. Now Shark E-Bikes is a fairly new company. They've been around for about 4 years. They started off mainly with commuter bikes and hardtails, that type of thing. And now they're transitioning into the full-blown proper enduro style e-mountain bikes. So we talk all about e-bikes, setting up a new e-bike company, whether you can ride an e-bike for fitness, all sorts of various different things. So thank you for tuning in. I hope you really enjoy the episode and enjoy. So Luke, thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. Glad to be here. Nice drive out as well up onto the hills. Very hilly actually, yeah. Which I'm sure we'll get on with the e-bikes.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, straight in there. Perfect. But yeah, no, it is where I live, as you're probably seeing. Everything's just up, down, up, down. Yeah. Like you can ride in the bottom of the valley, but that's just roads. But then as soon as you get off, you're either going straight up or you're going straight down.
And beautiful views as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's stunning. Yeah, we love it. We actually lived about half an hour away from here on the other side of the motorway. But we'd only been to where our house is now, I think once before, something like that, just gone to a pub.
Yeah.
And then this house came up and we drove over, loved the house. And we like just spent 10 minutes kind of driving in every direction. Couldn't find anything that put us off. It's a nice countryside. We're like, yeah, we'll go for it. But looking back, it was a bit brave really buying a house when we'd only been here once. But
yeah.
That worked out. We love it.
Perfect for biking as well, I imagine.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming on. You work for Shark E-Bikes. Hmm. Tell us a little bit more about, first of all, of your role at Shark, but yep. Then a little bit more about who Shark are, because you recently reached out to me, I think, on email or whatever, and we got chatting, so
yeah, it'd be nice to know more. I found you, your algorithms came up on TikTok, actually, which was really good. Seems to be the platform that's growing at the minute. But yeah, Shark E-Bike, so it's a relatively new brand in the like mountain bike and e-bike industry. It's been going 4 years. I've worked for the company just coming up for 2 years. And obviously, given the name, it is predominantly just e-bikes. So we only have e-bikes. There's scope in the future for maybe an analog if we do some races and we get some riders. But we've got e-bikes. So at the minute, there's 6 models. And started off with the really basic entry-level e-bikes, you know, that you would see for commuters. We've got a commuter bike, a step-through bike. And that was kind of the height of the kind of COVID boom, which I think everyone saw in both analog bikes, actually, and e-bikes, you know, it boomed off there. And that's kind of how the company started. It's quite funny, actually. It's an interesting story. The company's called Shark E-Bikes.
Yeah.
The director's called Carl Sharkey.
Okay.
You can see the play.
That's a great
on the
last name. Is that the actual last name?
Yeah, yeah. And everyone calls him Sharky. So the name of Shark E-Bikes, especially with a Yorkshire accent, plays quite well. And then all the bikes are named after sharks as well, which when I first joined the company, naively didn't realize how many sharks there were. So I thought, oh, we're going to be limited after like...
Yeah, we're going to have great white, yeah. Hammerhead, that'll be it.
There's honestly thousands. I'm sure someone will fact check me on that, but there's a lot. So at the minute we've got a tiger, an angel, a reef, Mako, Hammerhead, and then the fresher full suspension, which isn't out yet. I'm sure we'll come on to talking about that. But yeah, the list is endless. So that's kind of how it started. The company's grown, obviously, with the boom in e-bikes. And we've, you know, expanded our bikes, I think, got better in terms of what we've built and what we're looking to build in the future, including the full suspension. And learned a lot along the way. As I said, I've worked for the company for 2 years. I'm not from a biking background as such. Happy to kind of say that. And, you know, I did mountain biking as a kid in my teenagers. I was into skateboarding a lot and always been into my sports. But myself personally come from like a photography and marketing background.
Yeah.
Self-employed for 12 years. I just kind of wanted to change, try my hand at something different. And it's, you know, it's got its challenges along the way, but I'm enjoying it as well.
So. Yeah. How do you find the transition from 12 years of self-employed to being employed? I imagine that's a big change.
Massive change. Yeah. Massive. But I knew what was coming. We just had at the time, just had a daughter.
Yeah.
I've got a 2.5-year-old now. So like my commitments changed a little bit. I wanted a bit more stability.
Right, okay.
I'm sure a lot of people who listen to the podcast who are self-employed will know like when COVID came, a bit of a nightmare for being self-employed. So much admin to do for what I was doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I fancy a change after you know, a decade doing it. So yeah, it is different, but I like the stability. I like the challenge. Obviously, benefits come from working for a company.
Yeah,
you get holidays.
Yeah,
and like when you're self-employed, you don't get holidays. I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed learning. You know, I would didn't know tons about biking, and I think I've learned so much, just, you know, the little code words that mountain bikers have.
Yeah, yeah.
When they ask you questions about stuff and learning that. And now, you know, we've got to a point where, you know, I'm doing marketing for the company, but I'm also helping build the new bike.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to, you know, to get into, yeah, delve into imagine. That.
So how did, so Shark E-Bikes obviously started 4 years ago. Yeah. So was it just one director? Is it one guy who owns the company, Sharky?
Yeah, it is Sharky, yeah.
Okay. So has he got a business background, or how did that come about? So it's obviously a big step, isn't it?
Yeah, he is into his mountain biking. Maybe you should have had him on, but he's probably he probably wouldn't be up for talking. So he's really into his biking. He had a lot of friends who had e-bikes, and he wanted to make a British brand and start producing them. He's obviously got a couple of other businesses, but he does work closely with the bike side. And I knew Carl... Actually, this is totally off on a tangent, really, but I knew Carl through sim racing.
So okay.
I really like my motorsport.
Yeah.
As I mentioned off the podcast, I used to do a podcast on motorsport as well. So we're kind of in the same circles there, and that's how I got speaking with Carl. I think we was actually doing a virtual race of Le Mans 24 hours, which is...
Did you actually sit for 24 hours yourself and do that?
Well, you swap between like a team of four people.
Okay.
But you end up staying up all night. And
yeah, yeah.
It sounds really geeky, but I think if anyone's actually done it, it's like people take it really seriously.
Well, Zach, my videographer, wants to get his own house just so he can have a room for sim racing. Yeah, yeah. So you can definitely chat to him
and
after the podcast.
There's
about
some
that.
Money there. There's the rigs and stuff that you set up are really good. So yeah, that's how I met Carl, and okay. Then conversations happened, and I came on board and took on this challenge. So.
Yeah, yeah. I bet it was like how. Well, I suppose it was before you were there. So it's set up in COVID. How did you get people to trust kind of a new, completely new bike brand? Because there's that much competition, isn't there? It's not like there's a lack of e-bikes out there. Mm-hmm. How did it sort of kick off and then start to get that initial traction and getting people liking the bikes and buying the bikes?
I still think that's something that applies to today. There's been a business that's only 4 years old.
Yeah.
You know, we're competing against brands that are well-established. In, you know, been going 20, 30 years plus.
Yeah.
So that's still something we, I wouldn't say battle with, but we understand as like a company, we're still small. There's a lot of trust that people have got to put into us. And especially at the start, because as I mentioned earlier, there was quite a few companies that came, brought out products and then disappeared. And as if you're buying a bike, you know, you want that stability that you can go back to them in 5 years time if you need to, if you've still got the bike and if you need to get a new battery or a new motor or some components. And obviously the warranty is another big thing for people. So yeah, it was a challenge, not as much now, but a bigger challenge there. I think we're a small company, and we don't deny that, you know, we're a massive, huge company. We're a small team. Might put some people off, might actually encourage some people to trust us a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, we're always on hand. People can always speak to us. They can always come visit us. Obviously we've got our warehouse in Beverley, which we keep all the bikes, and that's where they're shipped from. So there's that. And then in terms of our social and marketing, is just becoming, you know, trying to put us out there rather than just the name and the brand. When I first started, there was a lot of changes I wanted to make and have kind of brought on, where we look more of a personal brand, and there's people behind it that, you know, people can get used to seeing, you know, even just myself on TikTok and Instagram and stuff. So put a face to the brand.
Yeah. Well, I say it's that same thing with like MTB Fitness. I think people buy from MTB Fitness rather than from, I don't know, Zwift or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some people will do both because they like the idea of working with an actual person.
Yeah.
You know that when you send a message, you're getting a response from me. And if you ask advice, it's coming from me. I think people like that. So I think for yours, you're definitely leaning into that side of it, aren't you? Where it's not Canyon with 1,000 employees. I don't know how many they have. It's actually, if they message you, they know that they're going to get in touch with one of the small team, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. And the British thing's a big thing, and I'm not going to say like our bikes are all made in Britain, because they're not. The full suspension prototype that we've got is handmade in the UK. When that goes in production, it might end up being a European build rather than the UK. But I think as a UK brand, people like that as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're growing and growing at the minute, and you know, I doubt we're never going to compete with the big boys at the top, especially for a long time. But, you know, what we're bringing out and the units bringing out, we're spending a lot of time building the bikes and testing them. You know, again, I know I talk about the full suspension a lot, but we built the prototype to allow other people to ride it.
Okay.
So we've let, you know, youngsters ride it who are doing downhill championships and just everyday riders, just to get their opinions. And again, going back to what I said, I'm still learning. So there's no point in me just helping build a bike that's probably never going to do a full downhill.
Yeah.
I can do a black run, but I'm not the quickest and I'm nowhere near as,
what. So have you started riding then?
Yeah, I ride quite a lot, which is really good. I've done it on hardtail. I've done it on the full suspension. I really enjoy it, mainly on e-bikes. The climb's a lot easier. We've got a nice little group. We do lots of stuff where we go up to Glentress in Scotland a couple of times a year. And there's a mix of guys who've got e-bikes, analog bikes. And just being in that community and learning about it more, getting their feedback is something I've tried to do a lot.
Yeah.
And then that helps in the marketing side then.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So what's kind of the vision of the brand then? Where do you want it to go in the near and long term? So you obviously started off with more commuter bikes and whatnot. Is that accurate?
Then
now you're wanting to go more down the mountain bike route, because the full source, which we'll definitely talk about afterwards, is a proper enduro rig, isn't it? It's 160 mil travel, something like that.
170 on the front,
so it is like a proper enduro / downhill rig, isn't it, really? So you're going more down the mountain bike route. What's the kind of vision for the brand then?
A lot of the time I'm led by what Sharky wants, and I think his vision from the start was to have a mountain bike brand. But again, as I said, it's hard to kind of just jump straight into that. You've got to build up, start from the bottom, learn the market. So I think that is, for me, marketing, it was hard at the start because we've got all these different bikes. I've got an entry level step through, which is £600. And then we've got a hard tail and do 60 plus miles. That's 2,300. And from a marketing perspective, they're completely different audiences. And nothing wrong with the £600 bike. For the person who uses it for commuting, perfect bike. £600, I think, is decent.
Bike.
But completely different market to someone who's paying £2,300 for a hardtail that can do 60 plus miles. So that was a challenge to do that and market that as a company. So, I sat down with Carl and looked at where we're going to go in the future and can we narrow it down a little bit. Either that or you broaden into different names, but obviously social medias and your marketing becomes harder if it's for a huge audience. With the exception of someone like Specialized and Trek, but as I said, they're well established that they can split off into different, and they've got tons of budget to do that. Which is another thing. So at the minute, I think for the brand going forward, the two bikes that we've got out, that the newest is the Hammerhead and the Mako. The Hammerhead's the hardtail. The Mako is a high-end step through. Currently our most expensive bike, actually, but it's impressive. It's the same motor, the same battery as the hardtail. It's got a carbon belt drive, which is popular. I don't know opinions on that one, but
very new,
and I think on a step through commuter bike, perfect. Zero maintenance,
right?
Really, chain wear is not an issue. It can just run and run and run, and they don't have to worry about it rusting or putting chain lube on, etc.
Right.
Internal gears as well on that one. So if someone gets to a traffic lights or the bottom of a hill, they can just change gear and off it goes. So that the bike's really good, and it does do well. Excuse me, it does well on sales. So we stick with them two for the minute, and then bring the full suspension out and go from there. And obviously, what I mentioned earlier is where they're built. There's obviously a lot of stigma, which I learned very quickly on where bikes are built. If they're Chinese or Taiwan, built in Europe. So that's something we've looked at closely. I think if you drill down to the nitty gritty, a lot of the stuff still comes from China, Taiwan, even on your big bikes, if depending on what parts you're putting on there. But in terms of the build, so the Hammerhead and the Mako are built in Europe, in Portugal.
Yeah.
The full suspension when it comes out it will be European or UK, probably going to be European build as well.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. The entry level ones were Chinese builds, and I'm always happy to say that because I think some brands hide away from where they're made.
Yeah.
All you have to do is obviously if it's a decent brand, you lift up the bike and look at the bit underneath, and it'll tell you where it's been made. Yeah. But still great bikes. The Tiger is it's a mountain bike looking bike, but it is very much a commuter bike. It's got front suspension, 100 mil Suntour, so very standard.
Yeah.
It does 35 miles on average for most people. Someone wants that kind of mountain bike look just for commuting to work. I still think it's a great bike, and touch wood, we hadn't had no kind of warranty issues or problems with it. So
yeah, So do you kind of design a bike totally from scratch then? Or are they kind of, are they almost like pre-built frames that you would buy? How does that whole world work?
Originally, on the Chinese ones, it is kind of, this is how the frame, you've got a few options, and then you can change the battery placement and then put on the components and stuff. And then with the European build, it is very much from spec. So you kind of go through everything and how you want it to look and where you want the battery to be. And
right.
You know, just a change that I saw from going from the entry-level Tiger to the mid-level hardtail we do is the battery on the entry-level pops out of the down tube, but from the top.
Yeah.
So it comes out, but it can be a little bit fiddly. You can sometimes scratch the tube as
right,
you're doing it.
Okay.
I mean, most bikes are like this now. It's on the down tube, but it's on the bottom.
Yeah.
With a catch, so you can unlock it. And then the catch holds it in place just in case you're not holding it as you unlock it. It's obviously quite a lot of weight to the lithium batteries.
Yeah.
So you just learn stuff like that when it comes to the next build and go from there. So yeah, again, a big learning curve, but I really do think the last two bikes we brought out are really good bikes.
Yeah.
And I think for the price range, a decent price as well.
I imagine some things like the geometry are the same as a non-powered mountain bike.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that kind of transfers across, doesn't it? Things like head angle and all that sort of jazz.
It's very similar, yeah, very similar. I mean, the only thing you've really got, the motor on most of them are mid-motor, so obviously in the middle of the frame.
Okay.
Rather than a rear hub.
Right.
So like a rear hub, it's almost the exact same geometry, apart from you've just got to find somewhere to put that battery into the tube, and then obviously the wiring through the tube, and then the rear hub sits in the middle of the back tyre.
Got you.
A mid motor, obviously the motor's kind of clamped onto the bottom of the frame. So that's obviously designed a little bit different, but in terms of the rest of the geometry, exactly the same.
I presume the mid motor, because I was saying to you earlier off camera, so e-bikes, I know of e-bikes, I've ridden e-bikes, but I don't know anything about the difference between where the motor is, the different batteries, the different drivetrain, and there is a lot, isn't there, to all of that. So the mid motor, presumably, that's are all mountain bikes in the middle. Is that kind of for weight distribution?
It's more the sensor that it runs on and how it works. I would say, if not 100% of mountain bikes that you're actually, you know, mountain bike riding and doing trails on are mid motors. So a mid motor works off a torque sensor. So as you put torque through the pedals, it then provides the power. Compared to a rear hub, that's obviously, as I mentioned on the back, that's on a cadence sensor. So you set the amount of power and it provides it through the rear wheel.
Okay.
Weirdly, for someone who's never been on an e-bike before, and this is my own personal opinion, but I actually think a rear hub feels more like an assisted bike. It's a bit like a rear wheel drive car. So you can feel that you've been pushed from behind.
Okay, yeah.
With the momentum, it's just going through the rear wheel.
Yeah.
Whereas a torque sensor, whilst a lot of the time can produce more power and get you up hills quicker and more torque, doesn't feel like you're getting as much as assistance, weirdly.
Okay.
Because it's more intuitive and natural, because it's just going through the pedals and the crank. Right. So that's kind of the basics of how they work, but you would find most mountain bikes are mid motors, and I guess extreme level to explain that, and I'm sure some people may disagree, but if you had a rear hub and a mid motor going up a really steep, wet, muddy climb,
yeah,
I mean, you probably slip a little bit on an analog bike, but the mid motor would do better because it's obviously not slipping on the back wheel as much as going through the crank. Whereas you probably get a lot of wheel spin on a
right,
rear hub.
Okay.
In a roundabout way of explaining.
Okay. Yeah. And what's the difference with, like, because you can get different motors you can get? I've seen like I'm going to totally massacre the names here, but like there's like the Shimano.
Yeah, yeah.
App. Is that a real thing?
Shimano do that. I don't know all the names. You got Shimano.
There's different ones in there, and I believe some are better than others, but I have no idea why.
I think it's like anything on mountain bikes, to be honest. It depends who you ask.
Yeah.
obviously, Bosch is a big player in the market. And we've looked into Bosch. There was just a bit of a wait time on the build to get them in and build them with the frame. So that, I wouldn't say put us off a little bit, but obviously we don't want to be waiting ages for a part where that bike then comes out and it potentially is out of date and there's new stuff. So we use Befang, which some people haven't heard of, but a really good brand. They're really up and coming on the e-bike market as well. Excuse me.
That's all right.
And so we use Befang mainly on the two European builds. You've got Befang, Bosch, Yamaha, Shimano. There's tons. Oh, okay. And they've all got their differences and The biggest thing for us is how much warranty you get as well.
Right.
Where we give 2 years warranty on pretty much everything on the bike, battery, motor, components. And that's something we want to carry on doing for every build that we do. So we've always chasing that from a battery builder and a motor builder that we get that 2 years.
Yeah. And where do you see things going with the weight of bikes? One of the biggest downside for mountain bikers at the minute with an e-bike, besides the cost and sort of the fitness side, which we'll get into, is the weight of it. Like, they are heavy.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they can be 10 kilos more than an equivalent mountain bike, which you do feel. It definitely feels like a different type of bike.
Yeah.
You're in that world. Do you see that changing in the near future? Are they getting much lighter, like batteries, or is that still light years away?
It is, and I think you're obviously looking at different technology to advance. And you know, when you look at cars and what they're doing, I think that would have to move quicker before then it filters down into e-bikes. It's funny because people want more range, but then they want a lighter bike. Obviously, yeah, the more range you have, the bigger battery you have, more lithium, heavier the bike becomes. Obviously, you can be looking at 3 kilos just in the battery, so that adds quite a lot of weight. I listened to Cole Williams when you had him on the podcast. I think he spoke about it. It was really interesting, actually. I'd encourage anyone to listen to that podcast he did with him. But I thought he was really good how he said, you know, you kind of factor in the weight of the e-bikes and they are what they are. And I know he mentioned there's these lighter prototype e-bikes coming out.
Which he's not a massive fan of, is he? Like the in-between bikes.
And I kind of stand with him on that because I don't know the range on them, so I could be totally off here, but say you're getting 15, 20 miles, is it really worth it? You might as well, I think, as Cole said, just have an analog bike. You know, if you're fit enough and you're good, then yeah. If you maybe, some people just want it instead of using an uplift, then I can see it. But the weight's like ours average from like 21 to 24 kilos on the bikes. You can still jump them. I can't, but you can still jump. That we've been there. The full suspension's been there. We went to Dolby yesterday actually, and some of the lads had it quite high in the air. So the weight's a factor for some people, but I think when you've got that electrical assistance, it's kind of a compromise. And I think the compromise to make it more accessible for a lot more people, which I'm sure we might talk about, is a fair compromise for a lot of people. Yeah. Or, you know, if you're just trading it to do the uplift so you can go back up the trail. Still getting that exercise, which is obviously always a common misconception that you don't burn any calories on e-bikes. You can get as much or as little out of it as you want to do.
Yeah.
But I think the weight's probably stabilised at like 20 kilo mark. You know, the full suspension is currently carbon rims, carbon build, carbon handlebars. Still coming in at like 22 kilos.
Yeah.
So even you put all carbon on it, it's hard to get it down.
It drops it by a kilo or two or whatever.
Yeah. And I just don't, in my opinion, I don't think losing that kilo is a big thing on an e-bike.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, got you. So you mentioned earlier about like various different laws around e-bikes, which besides there being a speed limit, that's the only law I would know. So I think it's quite an interesting thing for people to learn about.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that have quizzed up on it and know the stuff. But in basics, an e-bike is classed as an e-pack, which is an electric pedal-assisted cycle.
Okay.
I think is the government terminology. And since we left the EU, I think the law is quite vague. The EU have a lot more structure on it, where they like limit the voltage of the batteries and so on. And basically, the UK have, it's got to be limited to 15.5 miles an hour, assisted. So some people think that the bike will only do that. Obviously, the bike will go faster if you're going downhill or if you can pedal faster, but it's just you'll only be assisted to that 15.5 or 25 kph. And the battery has to be 250 watts. Is the road legal? Now, you'll find like a lot of trails bikes, they'll have a bigger battery because people are putting them on UK roads so they can do whatever they want. Obviously, there's the whole talk of de-restricting bikes, which is another topic in itself. But yeah, the legal limit, 15.5 and 250 watt, which it covers such a broad range of cycling, really. It covers everything. So commuter bikes, road bikes, mountain bikes, everything's put under that that legislation, which is frustrating sometimes, but I get that the government probably aren't going to delve into different types of cycling. So they kind of cover it all under there.
Do you think there should be different rules for different categories? If you were to design the rules, what would you do differently?
I think there should be, but it's never going to happen. Like, I'm not going to kid myself that they're never going to do that. The speed limit's always a talking
point. It's quite low, isn't it, that?
It is, and it is. And you speak to different people. You speak to, like, the mountain bikers. Yeah, some of them don't mind the 15.5 because they're just, you know, they're getting their assistance.
But I suppose for them, though, a mountain biker, we only really ride the climbs.
Yeah.
Where if you get anywhere near 15 mile an hour, you're well up it.
It's perfect.
It wouldn't happen on an analog bike. And then the descents, you don't really, the momentum takes over. So your speed on a descent, as you'll know, comes from the pedaling, but then most of it, you're freewheeling the vast majority of a descent.
Most of the time, a lot of the guys will turn it off.
They for a descent?
Yeah, mainly because if you're running on a, I know we're going off.
So you don't get like a bit of like a skip.
Yeah, if you're running on a torque sensor and the sensor's quite sensitive, you know, if your weight shifts a little bit, it can sometimes engage. Obviously, it's as you pedal, but if you just drop down a little bit, that's, you know, so it might give you a bit of a kick. So a lot of the guys turn it off.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It depends how sensitive the motor is, which can be tuned, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, that most of the mountain bikers would say 15.5 is perfect.
Yeah. But then if you're on a road, it's easy. There's a long road from mine to my local woods. I've got two options for one of my local trails. I can go up a massive climb over the moors and then drop in at the top of the woods. Or you can ride around. And the road from here to Sorby Bridge is about 4 miles. And it's just a pretty steady decline the whole way. So you can pedal in the top gear and you're easily past 20 mile an hour, like comfortably just, you know, really chilling out.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's a bit of a limitation of that max speed, isn't it? Where...
Yeah, and like you said, most people can cycle faster than 15.5 miles an hour just on flat commuter road bikes. Easy do that. So I think that's a lot of the time with commuters, they see, like, you know, people on fixed bikes going flying past them. And they're like, hey, I'm on an e-bike, I should be. And it's a sticking point. I'm going to sit on the fence a little bit. Because it's so broad, I get where they're coming from with the 15.5. I'd probably agree that maybe push it up to 20. Would be fair and safe. Obviously, safety is the big thing. As you know, as long as you're 14 years of age, you can buy any of these bikes. They're completely road legal. So you've got to think that there's 15-year-olds going on these, potentially 14-year-olds on UK roads. What's a safe limit? You know, I'm sure they should be looking at helmets should be mandatory before they should be upping the speed, especially on roads. But that's something you've got to factor in. The 20, I think, would be a fair gain. We get compared to different countries all the time as well, which I don't know if that works. Like, you compare us to America, which I don't know if it's 20 or 25. I always get confused when we transfer it from KPH, but their roads are a lot... They haven't got as much infrastructure for cycling, but they're a lot more open and easy to navigate. People call for even higher speeds than 20. The only thing I would say once you go past 20 is we live in a generation of people who've grown up driving with non-e-bikes. So, like, it's always, psychologically, they're always going to want to overtake the bike on a road.
Yeah.
If you've learned to drive, everyone who's on a bike is just on an analog bike. You're always going to want to overtake them. If they can start doing 30 mile an hour, and you see it with the people who can do 30 mile an hour on an analog bike, people are still trying to get past them.
Of course.
I think if everyone could do that on a bike, I think it could get a bit hairy. It'd take a big transition. And then, like, the country is different as well. That's another big thing. Like, London's so different to, like, up here and what you can achieve on the speeds and where it would be safe. So, it's a bit of a minefield. I can see how it's difficult for changes. I'd be up for, like, a 20 mile an hour.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Well, then I suppose for us mountain bikers, like I mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter as much. It's more for the other side of things. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So who do, getting onto like the fitness side of it, there is a massive kind of stigma. Whenever I post anything about e-bikes on social media, it always blows up without fail, no matter what I say. Sometimes you'll do something that's kind of on purpose. It's meant to spark a reaction.
Yeah.
But then other times, if you just say the word e-bike, always does really well. It's obviously a huge thing. I've noticed over the last few years, when they first started to get popular, you just got slated by the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
Like mountain bikers. It's definitely not the case now. They're much more accepted now than they used to be. And you go to a trail center and they're pretty much 50-50, I'd say, e-bikes versus non-powered bikes. Who do you think should be choosing or could choose an e-bike instead of a non-powered mountain bike, in your opinion?
It's a difficult question, Matt.
Big question, because yeah. There's so many different cases.
Yeah, so you go to the trail centres and at least 50%. Like, we go to Dalby because it's local to our kind of warehouse, and there's tons of e-bikes. And, you know, there's the obvious one. There's loads of science, and people have heard this a million times now, that people have got e-bikes are cycling for longer and for further. And that's becoming a bit of a cliche, because everyone's, you know, there's been lots of figures on that. But accessibility is a big thing, what I do in terms of marketing the e-bikes. And you know, that's from market research, seeing it firsthand, seeing it myself, actually. You know, as I mentioned at the start, I'm not from a big biking background. So, you know, the first time I started doing the trails again on analog bikes, I mean, I'm not the fittest of guys, but I've got a lot fitter from biking. You know, I was blowing. And I can still blow on an e-bike, to be honest. Like, it's still a lot of work, but it makes it a lot more accessible for people who, you know, we see people that haven't been on bikes since they were children. They might be in the 50s, 60s, and they haven't rode. Still want to go and do like a blue run or a Dalby, for example. And an e-bike allows them to do that. They would probably never touch it again if they only had the analog, because, you know, some of them climbs are steep, and without an uplift, it could be impossible for some people to kind of get the fitness level back up to do that, as you would know,
yeah,
unless they worked on it for a long, long time. So it makes it a lot of accessible. These aren't kind of a demographic that we aim for in the mountain bike range. The commuter bike step through is a little bit easy. You know, they're perfect for people, one who are commuting, but also camper vans, go camping at the weekend, motorhomes, those kind of step through bikes work really well for them people.
Because they can park up and then ride into the village,
ride,
or whatever.
If they've got, you know, a spot for a weekend with a motorhome, they can take it and go for a ride, and they've got the assistance there as much as they want to use it. And then the mountain bikes are a bit different, as you'll probably see. There's guys who ride some of our bikes who are really fit, really young, really fit. And some people might call them lazy. They just want to ride up sometimes rather than take the uplift. Or they just want that extra bit of power. But yeah, the bigger one is more making it accessible. And then you see people who sometimes will switch from an e-bike back to an analog bike once they've built up that fitness and get themselves an analog, which they've probably, you know, hoped to do, but not been able to do that. And then obviously the beauty about e-bikes, you've got the different levels of assistance. The Hammerhead, for example, is up to 5, or you can put it in increments of 3. So you can go 1 to 5 or 3, 6 and 9. Gives you kind of a bigger power output each time. And as they gain fitness, they can drop down the levels and use it as much as they want. You know, I commute to work as much as possible on the Tiger, which is the entry level 29-inch version. And I use the motor mainly for a really steep hill.
Yeah.
Especially going to work, you know, so I'm not arriving at work sweaty. I don't have to get a shower. I can sometimes just go in the clothes I'm going to wear for work. And just use it to power up the hill. And you still get that burn. You still, you know, can still be out of breath doing it. And then you can turn it off or just put it on level 1. Obviously, you're pushing a little bit more weight. So if you turn it off completely, it is heavier, as we mentioned earlier, than a normal bike. But you can put it on like level 1, level 2, and it just gives you that assistance. But it'll still be a push to get it to up to that 15. So yeah, these aren't like a one person I would aim for, but accessibility is a big thing for us.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing as well with it is that it is still a workout once you're riding it, isn't it? And like you say, you can go from max assistance to 20% assistance. That'll feel totally different. You're getting a little bit of help rather than a load of help.
Yeah.
And I think as well, a lot of people see it as like an and/or, and it can be in your garage. You know, a lot of riders have more than one bike, so you can have an e-bike and an analog bike. Some riders might use the e-bike to go out and then do loads more laps. So, you know, they're doing a race in the summer. You can do 2-3 times their amount of descending on an e-bike than you can on a normal bike.
Yeah. Yeah, you do see that. And I think going back to Carl Williams' podcast, I think he said if you could only have one bike, he probably would go for an e-bike. I'm interested, and I don't know the answer, but I'm interested to see in the future kind of where e-bikes sit. I think they've now become accepted.
Yeah. They have much more.
I think at the start, it was like, I was seeing people say that they're not allowed on trails and stuff like that. Well, they're a road legal bike. And I think people get it. You want more people on bikes, you know, for tons of different reasons. Fitness is a very big one. But, you know, just for the planet, et cetera, et cetera. But I think more for me personally is an enjoyment. More people on bikes, the better. As I said, we have that group of friends, and there's a mix of people who do e-bikes and non-e-bikes. And I think yourself have mentioned before, like you just accept that, right, I'm on an e-bike, I'll match their pace. Sometimes they might grab the handlebar for a little.
Yeah, get a nice tilt to the top. Yeah.
But you just accept that. And I think it makes it then a lot more people can go out and do it. And as I mentioned that people like over 50, 60, you know, they might never have got on a bike again to do it. And it gives them that opportunity to do it and they can try it out. And then eventually they're building up the fitness that way. So yeah, I'm interested to see where it stands in the future. And if you know, you see a lot of production bikes or all e-bikes or have some element, we'll see.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I suppose you can liken it to mountain bikes from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Basically road bikes with some slightly thicker tires.
Yeah.
If you compare that, you know, from 20, 30, 40 years ago, whatever the time frame is, to bikes now, they're just incomparable. Like you can't even compare the two with like suspension and disc brakes and the gears and the geometry and the length of the bike and everything. So yeah, it will be interesting seeing. I don't think they'll ever completely take over. I don't see what think personally we'll see a time where you can't buy a non-powered bike.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see them getting more and more popular and it actually being that there's more e-mountain bikes than normal mountain bikes.
Yeah.
I think part of it is because it is a difficult sport and part of the fact that it is difficult makes it more fun. Mm-hmm. But it is a difficult sport, have you found, when you rocked up to Dolby Forest for your very first ride and there's some steep climbs, you can be at absolute max heart rate and your legs are barely working. So it does make it more accessible for people to start. And a lot of people don't have the time to train and ride several times a week. Like, obviously, I come from a fitness background. I would always argue that people want to be working in the fitness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people sometimes put if you use an e-bike, you're lazy. It means you're not building your fitness. And that's just not true. Like, you can still use an e-bike and train three times a week and still go ride your bike three times a week. It doesn't have to be that it's just for the person who's only riding once on a weekend.
Yeah. And, what's the chances that if they want on the e-bike, they'll probably just be sat at home, not out anyway. So there's always that argument. And the other thing I wanted to say like about e-bikes is it's good for the industry in a whole. Like, you know, we're an e-bike only company at the minute. So a lot of the other companies have, you know, Specialized, Trex, Giants, you know, have both analog and e-bikes. And, you know, the more people on the bikes, more people using the local bike shops, using the local mechanics, and just helps the industry. There's more people on bikes. It just helps everybody. So I think that stigma's changed a lot from there. The trails are busier, more investment in the trails then, if they're paying for parking, using the cafes. Mm. So I think it massively benefits the whole market of e-bikes and non-e-bikes.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, whether it's mountain bikes, commuter bikes, et cetera.
Yeah. If you look at taking like the Porsche analogy, there was obviously a massive kickoff when Porsche introduced the Cayenne.
Yeah.
But in reality, Porsche are about to go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And it saved the company. And now you still get the Cayman and the 911 and even like the Taycan, like moving into kind of more electrified cars. That propped up the rest of it.
Yeah.
And now you still have your 911s because the Cayenne exists and the Macan and whatnot. And they're obviously much bigger sellers. Kind of the same thing in mountain biking. And the more money that gets spent on mountain biking, the better for us. And because you've probably noticed, it'd be interesting to get your view, but over the past, you had the COVID boom and then the post-COVID slump. The more people that spend on bikes, the better for all of us because we need all our biking companies to be healthy.
Yeah, it's very similar to that position Porsche were in. I think the bike industry at the minute is nowhere. It's not hidden away. It's struggled over the last probably 12 months. Mm. You've seen a lot of companies, thankfully, like the likes of Orange have said.
Yeah, they survived, haven't they?
They've survived, which is great to see. Obviously, very close to where we are now and where we're based as well. There's no hiding away that the bike market struggled. I think there's a lot of companies that have got COVID stock. I think everyone calls it COVID stock. They bought big in COVID and now they're kind of sat on stock. Obviously, some companies that are either going under or, you know, potentially are then selling stuff cheaper, which makes it obviously harder for the market to be established as a brand. Obviously, if there's other people selling them cheaper, we don't really want to drop the price massively because we kind of believe in the products. So it is a sticky position. Obviously, did really well in COVID and then dropped down, and I've decided to jump on when it's dropping down. So it's a challenge, but I enjoy it. And as a small brand, it's obviously hard. We haven't got big backing like some of the big companies. But I think it will be on the up. I actually think so many companies have documented the struggles as well. It's probably helped. You know, any publicity is normally good publicity. It's, you know, probably thinking, oh, we should get on his bike more, help support these.
Yeah, that's very true.
These companies. Take Orange, for example. Someone might have been looking at an Orange for the last couple of years and it's a bit too expensive. I'm not sure if I can afford it. And now they might be like, do you know what? I'll make that investment. And you know, the company that's probably, they've probably had an Orange since they were like 4 years old. So we'll support that. So it probably will benefit from that. And then you can never predict the future of where it is at the minute. But I do think over the next 12 months, it should hopefully rise back up.
Yeah.
E-bike sales have kind of been, you had that COVID boom. It's obviously everything's dropped off and I think they're probably stabilized now. And I'm not going to say we sell hundreds and hundreds of bikes a month because we don't. But we sell enough and we're bringing out a new bike. So we're obviously looking to stick in the market. We're not going anywhere. So I think that's a commitment just from us and other brands. If they're building something new and bringing it out to the market, they're here to stay, which is what I mentioned at the start. We didn't just want to be one of those companies that just comes in, sells some products, like saturates the market, gets us money and then disappears. We want to stick it out. And if that ends up as going down just a solely a mountain bike with maybe like a top end commuter bike is kind of where we're looking at the minute. That's probably what we'll do.
So tell us about this new bike then that we've kind of talked about a few times. So I've obviously seen pictures of it. Oh, it's on your Instagram, isn't it? And your TikTok. Yeah. So it does look like a typical kind of enduro bike, doesn't it? Enduro e-bike. So tell us about it.
Yeah, that is. It's a nice looking bike. I'm sure people can go and have a look. It's a matte black. This one's hand built in the UK. So we've never done full suspension before. So we didn't want to design a bike on paper, on a computer, send it to production and then bring it out. Because again, we're battling against bigger brands. We've one got to think about the price. My boss will kill me for saying this, but if we bring out a full suspension that's the same price as a Specialized,
yeah,
I wouldn't argue with anyone that's going to go buy a Specialized because they're more established. They're going to trust that brand more, so they've heard of them.
Or if it was the same price and the same spec, I suppose if it's the same price, but you're getting a better spec for the price. But I agree, people are going to go for the bigger name, aren't they? If it's the exact lifelike bike,
which is what I understand. So we've got that battle that we probably don't make as much money making them, so we're trying to put big spec on them and not undercut, but come at a fair price for a brand of our size. The full suspension. So we hand built a prototype, which is, I'll run through the specs very quickly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a mullet setup. So 29 on the front, 27 on the back. RockShox, the main 170s on the front, RockShox Monarch 150 on the rear. Carbon rims, which are a topic.
That's an interesting discussion. Yeah. So why did you go for carbon rims on
that
such
was, That was Sharky's choice. And that is very 50-50 on that one. Was, so that our idea of the bike is we will build it with kind of the feedback we've had from people and then let people ride it. It's one of a kind. We've only got one of them. So if it breaks, then we're stumped. We have to wait for another one. But we built this bike and we've let people ride it. So, you know, people, as I mentioned earlier, do downhill races. Your everyday kind of trail rider have all kind of had a go and we've tried to mix it up. We've been to loads of different bike parks, been to Scotland, it's been to Bike Park Wales, goes to Dalby, loads of different people have been on it. And just give the feedback and see kind of what the general, there's always going to be conflicting. People have always got their own setups that they want on it. Majority of people think it's pretty good. Carbon rims, if you'd done this podcast yesterday, I'd have been like, everyone said, no, I don't have them. Then we did some riding yesterday with some guys and they were like, we really like the carbon rims.
Yeah.
That's for another spanner in the works. The problem with like stuff like the carbon rims is they're very expensive.
That, and I think what springs to my mind as well is like the risk of them. I have carbon snapping rims on my bike, so and I love them. They're great. I've also broke both.
Yeah.
And like the Envy, like minor Envy rims, that they're great at replacing them. So you'll send a picture, there's a crack on it, they send you a new one. Like,
under warranty.
They're great. Yeah, I think it's a 5-year warranty, something like
that's
that.
That's brilliant, yeah.
So, and I've had a new front and a rear. And I really genuinely don't think that's anything to do with because I have a large following. I think it's just because they look after you when you buy the product. But then if you were to take let's say the stereotypical mountain e-biker who may be overweight, you know, 100 kilo plus guy on a heavy bike with carbon rims. It sounds like quite a brave.
Yeah.
But then if you've had downhillers thrashing it down the side of a mountain and, you know, they're still going strong.
Yeah, I mean, the lads yesterday were jumping it pretty high, and there was a few moments I was like, careful, it's only one of one. But yeah, but I mean, they're, you know, probably 50 kilos, 19-year-olds that don't weigh anything. But yeah, I think it was specced very high in terms of stuff like that. Maybe because Carl just wanted to see, you know, see what he could do. And it looks very nice, I have to admit. It does looks very good. So carbon frame, it's got a Befang M510 motor, Befang battery, 12-speed Shimano. The brakes are, in my opinion, not good enough. So they're only two pistons, MT Shimano MT200s, which is probably the thing that everyone's agreed on. They need to be four piston.
Quite an easy change to make, though.
Very easy. Probably we overlooked that naively, but again, that's why we did it. You know, we built it. You know, if we'd have built it and sent that to production, we'd have looked, you know, silly if everyone said, "Oh, it's got the wrong brakes." And I know you can change them once you get them, and that is kind of one of the perks of getting a new bike. People do like to make the changes, but we want to make it kind of pretty good as standard. Comes with standard with a dropper post. And yeah, comes in at, like, I think I mentioned it earlier, comes in at like 22 kilos, which I thought it was going to be a little bit lighter, to be honest. Because we always get given the weight that it should be, but then we just do the classic stand on the scales, set it to zero, and then hold the bike so we can get a... We do the same actually on our range test. We always get given a range from the motor and the battery producer, but then we'll just go, right, we'll set it to four or five and go and do, you know, I'm a pretty heavy guy and I still get more or less near what they say.
Better than the electric car world.
Yeah. And we try to give it, that's another thing, we try to give a fair average on the mileage, you know, and it's dead easy to see. People can just look at the amp hour of batteries, you know, it's a 10 amp and someone's saying it can do 50 plus miles. Probably not. It's quite an easy. So we always try and do a range test and then give a fair average.
Right.
It's going to depend on rider weight, obviously massively.
Yeah.
The terrain, you know, if you're going up and down these hills all day, you're not going to get as much range as someone just going on flat. So we tried to give an average on that. But yeah, back to the bike. So built the prototype, let everyone have a go. And now we're just building one more prototype, which is an aluminium frame. Mainly to see the weight. Not that many people were that interested in it being carbon. I think if it was analog and it wasn't an e-bike, carbon, I think obviously for that lightness would be huge. But I actually don't think from what we've looked at that the aluminium is going to make a huge difference to the weight. Obviously, a stronger frame. It depends who you ask, but...
It's a lot stiffer, isn't it, carbon? Yeah. Which I know is a selling point, but I've no idea how good you have to be to actually notice the difference between a stiffness of frame between an aluminium bike and a carbon bike.
Yeah, and obviously more expensive to produce it as a carbon, which then goes on to the consumer, which is what we're always trying to... We want to bring that bike under £4,000.
Whoa.
Is the aim. If we can get it to £3,500, great.
Is that quite a lot cheaper than your competitor for a similar spec, or is that similar?
I'd say you'd be looking at like £4,500 for the thing. So if we can get it to £4,000, I think buying it from us as a smaller brand, I think it's a fair compromise. Still give the 2-year warranty on it. So the second prototype's been built now. It should be ready, hopefully by the end of February. Give that a few more tries. If everyone's kind of happy with it, then go and look at bringing it into production fairly quickly. Obviously, as I said, you're always kind of battling that you want to produce it the current motor, so like the Befang M510, which has been around for a little bit actually, but you don't want to produce a bike and then bring out a new motor and everyone wants that, and you're like, so it's kind of, you're always battling that, like build a prototype, build it into production, get it out, and see what it is. It's always hard to judge, and again, we're new to the full suspension e-bike world, so we are kind of testing the water. I wouldn't say taking a gamble, but it's new to us, so hence we've done all this preparation on the build, and then see how that goes. Maybe even going to some races in the future. So I know there's e-bike
categories and a lot.
Not myself. It definitely won't be me that's doing it. and then go down there. And I'm sure anyone who works for another bike brand, that's a huge marketing tool, you know, just to get some guys riding the bikes going up every weekend to do these races. You can't really buy that type of marketing in ads because, as you will probably know, it's quite a small community, even though it's a large community mountain biking. Everyone seems to know everyone.
Yeah.
All the same guys go to these competitions. So that's where it is. And then in terms of people seeing it as well, which is the thing I wanted to mention, obviously we're going to take it to the cycling show at the NEC, which is 15th and 16th of July. So we'll have it there, hopefully both of them. We'll have the other prototype there. And then we'll be doing Malvern's in August Bank Holiday.
You've been before?
We haven't been as a brand.
Yeah.
But I've been before myself.
When is it this year? Do you know the date?
August Bank Holiday, I think, 25th, 26th.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
So we've booked that. Carl's always wanted to do that as well, but obviously we've never really had the bike to do it. You can't really rock up with a hard tail that's...
Yeah.
So now we've kind of feel like we've got the bike. It's the right time to do that. So it'll be really good. And again, it'll be good just to get people's opinions, good and bad. I love the trolls as much as I love the praise. So, that's where we are with it at the minute.
The Malvern's, when you've got a lot of the bikes, be a great place to let people test it out. I know I've been down a couple of times, and with Col, I was hanging around in the KTM tent once, and the bikes were just out all day. So they were out, back, you'd change anything that needed changing, quickly back out again. Like, people were just on them all day. You got a lot of people riding the analog bikes earlier on, and then the e-bikes later on when they were knackered.
But
somewhere like that'd be great for getting it out there.
And it's networking as well, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
I found other brands are really helpful. Like, you know, you can go and speak to the other British brands, especially. I not spoke to them all, but spoke to quite a lot of them. Especially as I mentioned earlier, like with the market as it is at the minute, everyone's in the same boat, so you can appreciate the struggles that other brands have got. It's a networking opportunity for us as well to meet the other brands, speak to them, whilst you're kind of competing against each other, you're still working together. So it'll be good for that. And it is a good crack. So it'll be nice to take the bikes down there.
Yeah, yeah. You touched earlier that you might want to bring out an analog bike. I know this is further down the road. Is that sort of just a pie in the sky idea? I don't mean that flippantly, but is that something that you're just thinking that you might want to do down the road, or is that
I mean, as a marketing, as I mentioned earlier, it's good for marketing. So if we can do that and someone races the bikes and we can eventually get to a point where we have a team or a couple of riders, then it just goes back to what I was saying about the racing and the marketing, how that works hand in hand. You can do it with the e-bike, and we're going to hopefully test the water this year with some of the races and see what the e-mountain bike scene's like for the races. And if that works, then we'll probably continue. I think it would always be nice to have an analog bike if you can kind of get yourself to the point where we can do that. Don't know what we'd do with the name. It's like... We'll just call it Sharky.
Of course.
Obviously, we get much play on the word e-bikes in the name. I don't know how we'd rebrand. And if we just drop the e-bikes, we might have a certain vacuum cleaner come after us. I don't know. There's all that, but that's not my job. We'll pass that on and let someone else deal with the whole brand inside of that. But yeah, it's nothing in plan at the minute to do an analog bike, but it's kind of in the distance.
Yeah.
Thinking about it.
All exciting times.
Yeah.
So what does... I definitely should have asked you this right at the beginning, but what does your role look like day to day at the company then?
Not what I thought it would be when I started. going back to what I was on about earlier, we've been self-employed. So like, I did a lot of photography self-employed, and I worked for some decent brands, some decent companies. And as a photographer, it was kind of like you take the pictures. You nine times out of ten do the edit, and then sometimes you'd have a digital editor. And then that would be it, your job would be over. Marketing's obviously a little bit different. And I think when you're working for a smaller company, marketing covers a lot of stuff that in maybe a big company it wouldn't. So like, you know, in a big company, you might have someone who does marketing and social media, and they might have a marketer, social media manager, someone who does events. I think in a smaller company, I'm sure there's other people that can appreciate this, that all comes under one umbrella.
Yeah.
A bit like being self-employed as well. It's the same thing. You're doing everything. So like, my job at Shark is pretty much marketing, social media, building the brand, booking events, looking at events, speaking to content creators and influencers. I hate that word, but...
Yeah, I don't like the word influencer. Yeah,
but it's the...
The buzz term.
Yeah. And all of that, you know, speaking to reviewers... Another big thing that we're going to push this year, producing YouTube content, which we've just started to do. We haven't put any out yet, but getting YouTube content ready to go. So it covers so much. Thankfully, I've kind of got that previous knowledge of photography and a little bit of video. I'm nowhere near. Although the iPhone 15 Pro.
I believe it's meant to be amazing, isn't it?
We tried it yesterday. It's pretty good. So hopefully it might cover some of my shoddy videography skills. So that kind of covers that. And it means, you know, I'm not always having to bring photographers in all the time. So obviously mountain biking, the big thing is you always want pictures. So yeah, that's kind of my role. And then day to day, at the minute, is just trying to speak to more people, network, as I was mentioning earlier, like with yourself and other people. Brand awareness, and again, just elaborate that we're kind of here to stay, plowing through the bad time. And then when we come out the good time, we're still going to be here, and building that confidence then with the customers to do that.
Yeah.
And then working alongside James, again, it's a very small team. So you've literally got, we've got Carl, there's a couple of people who do like accounts, and then we've got James, who's our mechanic. So we do like bike servicing back in Beverley. On any bike, it doesn't have to be an e-bike or even one of ours. But he does all the kind of pre-delivery inspection, PDIing, does all the shipping, warehouse jobs. And then we've got Rachel in the office and Carl as well. So it's a very small team, but I think people like that. Like, I'm sure people who've seen our TikTok and Instagram, James is like a bit of a fan favorite. He's quite dry and honestly is unbelievable. Like, I can ask him to do anything on TikTok. And he'll just do it.
Not bothered.
you know, it can be the most strange or cringe thing, you know, where he's got to speak or repeat what this music is or words, and he'll just do it. So shout out to James. He does do a lot, and then he's always on hand as well if people have got any issues with the bikes. They're fairly simple to use, but there's always questions that people want to ask. So
yeah,
I think I went off on a tangent there.
No, it's good. No, you didn't. Perfect. I think what you said then about, he's obviously perfectly, this is a total tangent, but I was having this conversation yesterday about people who are worried about putting themselves out there on social media. And some people are worried to do stupid things or to talk in a silly voice or do whatever it is. I think one thing people don't realize about social media is people won't watch your video and critique you. They'll either like it and watch it or they won't.
Yeah.
And it's that fast. People just swipe. Yeah, like scrolling through social media, if you look at something and you think, boring or not interested, you just swipe to the next one.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people worry about putting stuff out on TikTok and Instagram because they might get judged and whatnot. In reality, people don't judge you, they just swipe to the next one. Although I do get quite a lot of hate mail, but
hate mail's fine. And you'll know yourself, like, I got to an age where you don't care. As long as, like, you know the information you're putting out there is correct, and you know, you might not be the best. I'm not the best of presenting it. But as a brand as well, we had to work out where it was going to go. Like, if you look at what the bigger brands are doing, they've obviously got a huge budget that we haven't got at the minute. So like everything they can do is like really clean, really polished. You know, you look at some of the YouTube videos that the big brands put out and they're amazing. Yeah, like drone shots over the Alps, and they've got mountain bikes and it looks really good. And I think as a smaller brand, a lot of people fall into that hole that they've got to replicate that. It's impossible to do it. Like, you know, you're paying videographers thousands of pounds for the days, and you've potentially got actors paying riders to come out, flights, everything. It's just not possible. And I think people get stuck up on that, trying to replicate it, and you just can't do it. So like us as a brand, we know where we sit. So we're like, we put a face to the business. You'll see myself on there quite a lot. I've got a really monotone, boring voice, I think, but I still just do it and go along with it. And that's where we are as a brand. I think like the only exception is Santa Cruz. I think Santa Cruz, the mountain bike side.
That's true, yeah. Keep it YouTube, a bit cooler, and
it's pretty good. Yeah. Like it's still quite, you know, they've got a lot of equipment. It's still probably got a few photographers, videographers, production crew. But I kind of like that raw behind the scenes stuff. So that's probably in the future where we would take the YouTube. I'm not a big fan now of just standing with the bike and telling people what's on it.
Yeah.
Because one, they can just go and look at the specs, which is probably what they would do. If they are interested in buying it, and you're spending that amount of money, you would go on the website, and I encourage anyone to do this, look at every spec, and then if there's another bike from another brand, go and do the same and compare them side by side. And that's kind of what reviewers are there for. You know, they'll go and do that, they'll stand with the bike and run through the points, and they can either rip it to pieces, say they like it, say what they would change. So I think as a brand, there's not much point in us doing that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll just repeat ourselves. So we try not to take it too serious on social media. Show a bit of his character and his self as well, and get people to know us. So,
yeah.
Again, working just on that budget that we've got at the minute.
I think what you said before, though, you don't have to emulate the big brands because people are going to buy from you because you're a smaller brand. Yeah. It's not that they're going to buy despite you being a small brand. In my opinion, they're going to buy because of that, because they can see the faces behind it. I think you don't have to compete against the big brands in that regard because people are interested in seeing behind the scenes in the warehouse, and people get to know you, don't they? Like people who listen to my podcast or follow my daily emails on my Instagram, they feel like they know you because they see the little bits. Definitely on, I send a free daily email out Monday to Friday, sign up on the website. And on there, people really feel like they know you because when something happens in my life, I share it on there.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing with yours, isn't it? Where you're a small team. So it's nice. People buy from people that they know, like, and trust. And being a small brand, you can really lean into that, can't you?
And I think that's what we've done on the full suspension build. Like so many people have, like, even if it is just TikTok comments, and I know people are like, oh, you won't listen to them, but like genuinely read what everyone's putting. Some people put rubbish, you know, talk utter rubbish, but we don't mind, we'll read it. And then there's people who actually put the actual thoughts into the bike and what they would change. And then you kind of get an idea of how many people are saying that. And I think people have felt like they've come on this journey with that build because we've documented so much of it. And yeah, they're a little bit impatient now because I did say, we were aiming for like start of the year. Obviously, just the way everything goes, always gets pushed back. So people are like, why is it not out yet? When's it coming out? But I think that just shows that they're actually invested. They might not buy it at the end of it, but I feel like they've, even if it's a small part, played a little part in that build. And you don't always, you know, very rarely you get that with
big brands.
You wouldn't get it with like a car, for example. Like,
yeah, collaborative build and approach.
Ask what they want on the car, probably not. So yeah, we've kind of done that, and maybe we'll do that again in the future. So it's worked fairly well, and we've kind of built a community around that bike that's not even out yet. So yeah. I've really enjoyed doing that, and selfishly, it's helped me spec the bike to what people would want rather than just do it off a whim or what we kind of read or just replicate someone else. So yeah, I've enjoyed that.
So when are you hoping that people will be able to actually buy and have them? Well, are you going to do pre-orders or are you just getting them in stock and then selling them?
Yeah, pre-orders. So once the final prototype's made, which I'm hoping is at some point in February, and then once that's made, if we're happy with it, which I genuinely think we will be, like it's hard to say without the bike in front of you, but I think we've done all the changes we wanted to do. We've built it with an aluminium frame. We can then compare the two. It would be, you know, almost an instant go ahead. Like, obviously you've got to order like the parts from Befang and Shimano, if you go Shimano, for example, and get them across. And then once they come, you can put it into production and go from there. So I don't know. I'm going to sit on the fence. I can't give you, I would hope this year, and I keep saying to people this year. So if we don't get it done this year, a lot of people are going to troll me for saying this year. But obviously, as you find out very quickly, building bikes, a lot of stuff can block your path a little bit and jump through hoops. Really boringly, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through in terms of like EM regulation. So like comes under like EU brackets, but obviously because they've got lithium batteries and there's a motor and there's electrics, you've got to jump through lots of testing. And I feel like we're quite rehearsed in it now. We've done it quite a few times. We know what kind of get stuck and what you have to work on. Obviously you have to make sure everything's bang on, done correctly, tested correctly, everything's CE marked, everything's been put through every sort of test, which kind of covers you from the whole e-bike fires that hits the news, which as a like e-bike industry always like kills you a little bit. So you're like, not really anything to do with any of the like reputable brands. I think it comes more from,
are they just from just Chinese copies of stuff that are blowing up? Or?
Potentially, and I don't know if they are Chinese. I think it's stuff that hasn't been regulated. I can see from my own opinion, it's, you know, stuff that comes off certain websites. I'm not going to mention the websites, I'm sure people know, but it comes off certain websites. It's not been tested, potentially like a grey import as well. Obviously not road legal. Huge battery. The charger's not been tested properly.
Right, okay.
People are leaving that on charge overnight and causes all sorts of problems. You can see how it can build up from the big lithium cell battery charger that's not been tested. We'll get into a UK socket. And yeah, so that's obviously, that's no fault of anyone else because the structure is there that you have to tick all these boxes. So if you're bringing out an actual bike and you're a reputable brand, then you jump through all them hoops and prove that everything's safe and And it's really easy to see. Anyone can go and look on just either the charger, the battery, the motor. It'll have all the markings.
Right, okay.
Should have CE marking, EN15, and I don't know the rest of the digits, but there's a certain code for e-bike batteries and motors. And it'll show you, as I mentioned earlier, where it's built and who's built it, and so on and so forth.
But I think essentially, it's just like it would with any other mountain bike. You buy it from a reputable company like yourself.
Yeah, or a retailer.
Yeah.
So a retailer's always going to do their research before they jump into buying a brand, which is another thing where...
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah, are you hoping to just sell direct, or are you hoping to be in retailers
as well?
We've
got a few retailers, and you know, not as much as I would want, but again, I get we're still a small brand, and I still think 4 years is quite a short period. People are still just sussing us out, I think, is kind of where we're at. We've got, we're at Four Play Cycles in Cumbria, Alan's E-Bikes, Leighton Buzzard, another one, and the boss is going to kill me for forgetting the name. There's another one, there's one in Scotland, but we're not in any of the big ones yet, which more than transparent to say that, you know, that's something we want to do in the future. But yeah, we're not in the big ones. So yeah, retailers, and then we sell direct. So we ship to the UK, obviously, and Europe as well. I don't know if in shipping to Europe, but some countries have different regulations. It's normally more than ours, so it isn't an issue. And obviously the brakes are on the wrong side, you're British.
yeah. Which a lot of people don't know, that the front and back brakes are back to front in different countries. Yeah. A lot of people have no idea about
that.
Which,
if you build the bike in Europe, you've got to, like, you know, make sure.
Yeah, make sure you get it right. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want someone yanking the back brake and it being the front.
But yeah, people don't realise that. So if you do go on holiday abroad, like, the brakes are the wrong way around.
Yeah.
For us Brits, anyway.
Yeah.
The rest of Europe would say they're the right way around. Yeah.
Oh, boom. Well, it's exciting for it all to come out. Thank you so much for coming on today. And from my point of view, it's been really interesting looking behind the scenes of a up-and-coming brand, if you like. It's great to hear more about it.
Yeah, I've appreciated it. It's been really good.
It's been good. Underneath this, I'll put all the links to your website and your social media and stuff so people can go and click that. But thank you for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, mate.